Chapter 14. Isabeau, are you all right?
Of course.
Isabeau was bending back the covers on a priceless old book and shaking it upside down. Emily Mather looked at Isabeau doubtfully. The library was in a state of utter chaos. The rest of the chateau was neat as a pin, but this room looked as if a tornado had blown through it. Books were strewn everywhere. Someone had pulled them off the shelves and flung them onto every other available surface.
It must be here. You would have known that the children were together.
Isabeau flung the book aside and reached for another. It pained Emily to her librarian's soul to see books mistreated like this.
I don't understand. What are you looking for?
She picked up the discarded volume and closed it gently.
Matthew and Diana were going to 1590. I was not at home then, but in Trie. Philippe would have known about Matthew's new wife. He would have left me word.
Isabeau's hair hung down around her face and flowed nearly to her waist. Impatiently, she took it in her hands and twisted it out of her way. After examining the spine and pages of her latest victim, she sliced open the end paper with the sharp nail of her index finger. Finding nothing hidden there, she growled with frustration.
But these are books, not letters, Emily said carefully.
She didn't know Isabeau well, but Emily was well acquainted with the more gruesome legends about Matthew's mother and what she had done in Trier and other places. The matriarch of the de Clermont family was no friend to witches, and even though Diana trusted the woman, Emily was still not sure.
I'm not looking for a letter. Weird little notes to each other in the pages of books. I searched through every volume in the library when he died, wanting to have every last piece of him. But I must have missed something.
Maybe it wasn't there to be found. Not then.
A dry voice spoke from the shadows by the door. Sarah Bishop's red hair was wild, and her face white with worry and lack of sleep.
Mart is gonna have a fit when she sees this. And it's a good thing Diana isn't around. She'd give you a lecture on book preservation that would bore you stupid.
Tabitha, who accompanied Sarah everywhere, shot from between the witch's legs. It was Isabeau's turn to be confused.
What do you mean, Sarah?
Time is tricky. Even if everything went according to plan and Diana took Matthew back to the first day of November in 1590, it may still be too soon to look for a message from your husband. And you wouldn't have found a message before because Philippe hadn't met my niece yet.
Sarah paused.
I think Tabitha's eating that book.
Tabitha, delighted to be in a house with an ample supply of mice and plenty of dark corners for hiding, had recently taken to climbing the furniture and the drapes. She was perched on one of the library shelves, gnawing on the corner of a leather-bound volume.
Cacco gatti!
Isabeau cried, rushing over to the shelves.
That is one of Diana's favorites.
Tabitha, who had never backed down from a confrontation with another predator, with the exception of Miriam, swiped at the book so that it fell to the floor. She jumped down after it, hovering over her prize like a lion guarding a particularly desirable treat.
It's one of those alchemy books with pictures in it, Sarah said, liberating the book from her cat and flipping through the pages.
She gave the cover a sniff.
Well, no wonder Tabitha wants to chew on it. It smells of mint and leather, just like her favorite toy.
A square of paper, folded and folded and folded again, fluttered to the floor. Deprived of the book, Tabitha picked up the paper between her sharp teeth and stalked toward the door. Isabeau was waiting for her. She picked Tabitha up by the scruff of her neck and pried the paper from the cat's mouth. Then she kissed the surprised feline on the nose.
Clever cat. You will have fish for supper.
Is that what you were looking for?
Emily eyed the scrap. It didn't seem worth tearing the room apart. Isabeau's answer was clear from the way she handled it. She carefully unfolded it to reveal a 5-inch square of thick paper, both sides covered in tiny characters.
That's written in some kind of code, said Sarah. She swung her zebra-striped reading glasses onto her nose from the cord around her neck to get a better look.
Not a code. Greek.
Isabeau's hands trembled as she smoothed the paper flat.
What does it say? Sarah asked. Sarah, Emily scolded, it's private.
It's from Philippe. He saw them.
Isabeau breathed, her eyes racing across the text. Her hand went to her mouth, relief vying with disbelief. Sarah waited for the vampire to finish reading. It took 2 minutes, which was 90 seconds longer than she would have given anyone else.
Well?
They were with him for the holidays. On the morning of the Christians' holy celebration, I said farewell to your son. He is happy at last. Mated to a woman who walks in the footsteps of the goddess and is worthy of his love,
Isabeau read aloud.
Are you sure he means Matthew and Diana?
Emily found the phrasing oddly formal and vague for an exchange between husband and wife.
Yes. Matthew was always the child we worried over, though his brothers and sisters got into far worse predicaments. My one wish was to see Matthew happy.
And the reference to the woman who walks in the footsteps of the goddess is pretty clear, Sarah agreed. He couldn't very well give her name and identify Diana as a witch. What if someone else had found it?
There is more, Isabeau continued. Fate still has the power to surprise us, bright one. I fear there are difficult times ahead for all of us. I will do what I can, in what time remains to me, to ensure your safety and that of our children and grandchildren, those whose blessing we already enjoy, and those as yet unborn.
Sarah swore. Unborn, not unmade?
Yes, Isabeau whispered. Philippe always chose his words carefully.
So he was trying to tell us something about Diana and Matthew, Sarah said. Isabeau sank onto the sofa.
A long, long time ago, there were rumors about creatures who were different, immortal but powerful too. Around that time, the covenant was first signed. Some claimed that a witch gave birth to a baby who wept tears of blood like a vampire. Whenever that child did so, fierce winds blew in from the sea.
I've never heard that before, Emily said, frowning.
It was dismissed as a myth, a story created to engender fear among creatures. Few among us now would remember, and even fewer would believe it possible.
Isabeau touched the paper in her lap.
But Philippe knew it was true. He held the child, you see, and knew it for what it was.
Which was what? Sarah said, stunned.
A manja song born of a witch. The poor child was starving. The witch's family took the baby boy from her and refused to feed him blood on the grounds that if he was forced to take only milk, it would keep him from turning into one of us.
Surely Matthew knows this story, Emily said. You would have told him for his research if not for Diana's sake.
Isabeau shook her head.
It was not my tale to tell.
You and your secrets, Sarah said bitterly.
And what of your secrets, Sarah? Isabeau cried. Do you really believe that the witches, creatures like Sartu and Peter Knox, know nothing about this manja song child and its mother?
Stop it, both of you, Emily said sharply. If the story is true and other creatures know it, then Diana is in grave danger. Sophie, too.
Her parents were both witches, but she's a demon, Sarah said, thinking of the young couple who had appeared on her doorstep in New York days before Halloween. No one understood how the two demons fit into this mystery.
So is Sophie's husband, but their daughter will be a witch. She and Nathaniel are further proof that we don't understand how witches, demons, and vampires reproduce and pass their abilities on to their children, Emily said, worried.
Sophie and Nathaniel aren't the only creatures who need to stay clear of the congregation. It's a good thing Matthew and Diana are safely in 1590 and not here. Sarah was grim.
But the longer those two stay in the past, the more likely it is they'll change the present, Emily observed. Sooner or later, Diana and Matthew will give themselves away.
What do you mean, Emily? Asked Isabeau.
Time has to adjust, and not in the melodramatic way people think, with wars averted and presidential elections changed. It'll be little things like this note that pop up here and there.
Anomalies, Isabeau murmured. Philippe was always looking for anomalies in the world. It's why I still read all the newspapers. It became our habit to look through them each morning.
Her eyes closed against the memory. He loved the sports section, of course, and read the education columns as well.
Philippe was worried about what children would learn in the future. He established fellowships for the study of Greek and philosophy, and he endowed colleges for women. I always thought it strange.
He was looking for Diana, Emily said, with the certainty of someone blessed with second sight.
Perhaps. Once I asked him why he was so preoccupied with current events and what he hoped to discover in the papers. Philippe said he would know it when he saw it, Isabeau replied. She smiled sadly. He loved his mysteries and said if it were possible, he would like to be a detective like Sherlock Holmes.
We need to make sure we notice any of these little time bumps before the congregation does, said Sarah.
I will tell Marcus, Isabeau agreed with a nod.
You should have told Matthew about that mixed species baby. Sarah was unable to keep the note of recrimination from her voice.
My son loves Diana, and if he had known about that child, Matthew would have turned his back on her rather than put her and the baby in danger.
Bishops aren't so easily cowed, Isabeau. If Diana wanted your son, she would have found a way to have him.
Well, Diana did want him, and they have each other now, Emily pointed out. But we're not going to have to share this news only with Marcus. Sophie and Nathaniel have to know too. Sarah and Emily left the library. They were staying in Louisa de Clermont's old room, down the hall from Isabeau. Sarah thought there were times of day when it smelled a bit like Diana. Isabeau remained after they'd gone, gathering up books and reshelving them. When the room was orderly once again, she returned to the sofa and picked up the message from her husband. There was more to it than she had revealed to the witches. She reread the final lines.
But enough of these dark matters. You must keep yourself safe, too, so that you can enjoy the future with them. It has been 2 days since I reminded you that you hold my heart. I wish that I could do so every moment, so that you do not forget it, or the name of the man who will cherish yours forevermore. Philippos.
In the last days of his life, there had been moments when Philippe couldn't remember his own name, let alone hers.
Thank you, Diana, Isabeau whispered into the night, for giving him back to me.
Several hours later, Sarah heard a strange sound overhead, like music, but more than music. She stumbled out of the room to find Mart in the hall, wrapped in an old chenille bathrobe with a frog embroidered on the pocket, a bittersweet expression on her face.
What is that? Sarah asked, looking up. Nothing human could hope to produce a sound that beautiful and poignant. There must be an angel on the roof.
Isabeau is singing again, Mart answered. She has only done so once since Philippe died, when your niece was in danger and needed to be pulled back into this world.
Is she all right?
There was so much grief and loss in every note that Sarah's heart constricted. There weren't words to describe the sound.
Mart nodded.
The music is a good thing, a sign that her mourning may at last be coming to an end. Only then will Isabeau begin to live again.
Two women, vampire and witch, listened until the final notes of Isabeau's song faded into silence.